Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Thank you for downloading the Tech Central podcast. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm in Pretoria to chat to Corrie de Jager, an attorney whose areas of practice include conveyancing, property law, town planning, and trusts. But before you think you've downloaded the Law Central podcast instead of Tech Central, I'm here to chat to Corrie today about something very much tech-related. I first interviewed Corrie back in January 2013 about he and his partners in a company called Hydrox Holdings had invented a technology that could literally help change the world. They developed a membraneless technique for splitting water into component parts of hydrogen and oxygen at a low cost that could help move the world onto non-polluting hydrogen fuel cell powered cars sooner rather than later. Corrie, thanks for chatting to Tech Central today.
Thank you for the opportunity, Duncan. I really appreciate it to be here.
It's our pleasure. So, Corrie, let's go back even before we last chatted in 2013. And maybe give our listeners an overview of how you, a lawyer, got involved in something as high-tech as splitting water, in effect, to create hydrogen. This goes back almost two decades, if I'm not mistaken. How did it all come about?
Yes, Duncan, I was approached in 1999 by my brother-in-law with this hairy, brainy story of him that he's got a car that runs on water. And I said to him, I'd like to come and have a look, but only on one condition, that he's got two beers ready for me and I must leave before the blow biller started playing rugby. Because I really didn't believe the story. And this is where it all started. I went there and he had two of his friends or co-technical guys there, and they had an engine, a Mazda Etude engine, on blocks. I was very skeptical, and they had virtually it was an electrolyzer system consisting of filter, the stainless steel filter, sand filter of a swimming pool that they converted by putting direct electricity onto this. They had two electrodes, they put water in there, and that mixture of gas, and I must add here that very explosive mixture of gas, so please don't try this at home. It's extremely explosive, and that mixture of hydrogen and oxygen that they put back into the car engine, and yes, the car did run for about 5 minutes, and then it stopped. But what I didn't notice at that stage is the whole ceiling, because this garage where they did it had a ceiling in that was pockmarked with all the previous explosions they encountered. And the one guy was always standing in the door. I couldn't understand it either because I was totally ignorant. But because I was intrigued about this, the car engine was in fact running for 5 minutes. Then it stopped on this mixture, which was the only thing that got in there, no petrol at all. And out was only water at the exhaust. There was only water coming out. So I was quite intrigued by this. And I said, all right, maybe it's worth a go. Let's go and have a look. And I started with engineers and, doing the correct approach. And I contacted patent attorneys to find out if this is patentable and whatever the case is. But the long and the short of it is it's a highly dangerous mixture that comes of that. And that was also the reason why our company is called Hydrox Holdings. Hydrox being the hydrogen and oxygen name combined, because we couldn't split it at that stage. And we did a lot. We worked with the University of Pretoria's experts, and we ran cars on dynamometers and stuff like that. We even had a real Mazda Etude running on this mixture combined with petrol. And there was some saving to a certain extent, but it was so dangerous that Ford's engineers in Silverton said to us, no, Ford won't touch it. Although they tested it for 2 days, I must add, it was quite a fascinating journey. But that's where we started. And then the quest was, let's then make this smaller, that it can fit into a car. Let's make it safer. But eventually, we had to split the hydrogen and oxygen mixture. And the only way to split it was through, at that stage, membrane technology.
Before you start to talk about the membrane technologies and exactly the technologies that you've developed, what was it that your brother-in-law did for a living that he was experimenting with this sort of stuff?
He was a very technical, he still is a very technical guy. So he had a lot of friends. The one was previously worked at the Nuclear Energy Corporation of South Africa. The other guy was also a very electrical-minded guy. So they were very mechanical. They tinkered in cars and did all kinds of funny things. And they always come to me with all these funny stories and say they can do this and that. I was obviously very skeptical. Just for background's sake, I had three brothers who was all engineers. I was the odd one out here.
Okay.
So that's why, you know, I took it very, very, with a huge pinch of salt here and said, this is not possible. And it wasn't really possible at that stage. And even now, you know, to run a car purely on water, it's not possible. But you can run it on the hydrogen coming out of water, because 1 liter of water gives you over 1,000 liters of hydrogen. So there's a lot of hydrogen linked up in water. The trick is just to get it out economically, to split it economically, and this is where it's all about. You can't do it currently. It's still very, very expensive. If I can jump a little bit, if you want to buy 1 kilogram of hydrogen today, it's going to cost you R1,500 if you buy it from the normal producers. Whilst 1 kilogram is equal to 4.5 liters of petrol's energy value.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do you pay for 4.5 liters of petrol? Probably about 60 rands. So you pay 1,500 rand for 60 rands of value. That's why hydrogen can never work. In this country, at least, it's too expensive.
Okay, so the trick is getting the cost of the producing that hydrogen down, which is where you guys have been focusing your energies. Now, you mentioned when you started experimenting with this, we started this company in the early days, the only way of producing this hydrogen was through a membrane-based type of technology. Just explain what that means.
We couldn't at that stage afford these membranes, because membranes are made from let's call it plain fancy plastics. It's made out of actual real rare earth metals that they use, and that's why it's very expensive to get hold of them. We ordered some from through the University of the Western Cape, through from West Germany at that stage. And we paid serious monies for these membranes, but they couldn't really do it for us. So we had to build our own. But we've got a team of very ingenious guys on this side. They don't stop if they get an obstacle in the way. So they started designing our own membranes. We experimented with a lot of things. But in the end, we managed to do it, to create first a plastic membrane.
Right.
And that worked well.
What does the membrane actually do?
The membrane, what it does, it stops the hydrogen and oxygen gas bubbles from jumping across, because they don't want to stay on its own. So if you think about the normal process of electrolysis, you've got a solid two plates, and one you put positive and one you put negative electricity. You've got water in between. Then the electrons flow from the one to the other, and then hydrogen gas starts on the negative side, on the cathode, and oxygen gas on the anode, on the positive sides. But the gas itself, they migrate back and they recombine. They don't want to stay separate. So a membrane is essential to keep these gases apart. So if I can put it in very clear, mainly plain language, it's like a cloth in between. The cloth is wetted on both sides, but the gas does not want to go through the cloth. But the electricity does go through it.
Okay.
And this is the purpose of the membrane. So we were a bit, stuck with that. We had to get a membrane to keep the gases separate, because you can't use any over 93%. If your gas purity is below 94-93% hydrogen, it's extremely explosive.
Oh.
So that's why you've got to get hydrogen to be pure. And if it's pure, it's safer than LP gas, by the way.
Oh.
So hydrogen is, in fact, very, very safe. As long as it's pure, it doesn't contain oxygen. So that's why the quest is to get pure, and I'm talking of 99.9% purity. And this is what we can achieve with our current process, which doesn't employ any membrane at all.
Okay. But you started with a membrane-based solution. The ones that you initially started experimenting with were expensive imported technology. So you started looking at building your own membrane. What did you do differently to what the other guys were doing?
We changed the flow pattern. Currently, all flow is parallel to the two electrodes with a membrane in between. What we did is we developed a membrane consisting like two shower heads back to back. And we've got a flow in between them and then out through the two shower heads towards the towards the two electrodes. So this was our setup. So what you have is you have got a flow through a pipe, if you like, through two shower heads back to back towards the two solid electrodes. Electricity does go against this flow of the water. This is what's the secret here. It's all about flow. Mm-hmm. So electricity does go against the stream. So if you take a hose pipe and you put electricity on the top, it will go against the stream and shock you still. But the bubbles is stopped by means of the flow. This is what we use, and this is our secret. But what this all culminated in is one day, one of these guys is a very, very brilliant electrical guy. He woke up one night, and he just had this inspiration that let's change it.
Who is this guy?
George Anagnostopoulos. Mm-hmm. He's a Greek guy, obviously, but a brilliant electrician, and he does electrical power sources and stuff. So he's very good in electricity. And he woke up one night and he said, let's change all of this. Let's make the electrodes act like the membranes. Mm. So what we're using now is perforated electrodes. We change the flow altogether. It's like two pipes, if you like, standing end to end with about a 1 or 2 millimeter gap in between. At the top of the pipes, you've got your electrodes, which is now totally perforated, and we use mesh for this. And by the way, we use nickel mesh, which is very, very inexpensive. And then the whole thing is submerged in the electrolytic solution in the water. So the water flows through pressure through around the two electrodes and through the pipes out. It's as simple as that. And this is what's really surprising, that nobody has ever thought of this. A lot of people came very close to this, but they've never really crossed all the dots. And this is where we went the step beyond. And also now what we found is at these international conferences where we present our technology, people are astonished. They said, it's so simple. Why didn't anybody think about that? But we did. And now it works for us.
Okay. So maybe if you don't mind, just go into a bit more detail about exactly how this membraneless system that you've developed actually works. What is involved in the process of creating the hydrogen? How big are these machines, if I can call them that? And what is the input and what's the output?
Okay. Good question, but a lot of complications here involved. First of all, the units that we envisage and the ones that we build, and we've built about four prototypes already. That's, you know, test models which we use to test and to test our theories and to prove that we can do it. They're about the size of a double fridge, a double door fridge.
Okay.
Just give you an idea on size wise. The one that we envisage that will give you the 10 to 20 kilogram a day will probably take an area of about 24 square meters. So it's quite a bigger one, but that will then be able to do a small factory or a number of houses together. And this is from a very simple base. So we look at the one thing, it doesn't help we produce just a trinkle of hydrogen per day. We need sufficient quantities, and we need to go to at least a kilogram of hydrogen per hour so that you can have enough hydrogen to use for the purpose you want to employ it. And there's umpteenth uses for hydrogen.
And that would be for a domestic
domestic, maybe you and your neighbors and like four or five houses, whatever, that will be sufficient. Otherwise, you must get a smaller unit, whatever the case is, then obviously it becomes much smaller.
Yeah.
So this whole process employs that you use normal water, obviously water that we've just filtered out all the chlorine and stuff like that, because that gives you negative side effects. So you just need pure water. You add an electrolytic salt to it.
So that filter, is that a complex system?
A normal filter. A normal.
No,
filter.
No, so something, not,
you
something
buy
basic.
Off, yeah.
Okay.
You buy off shelves. It's no big deal.
Okay.
So, or you can buy the demineralized water. It's not a question. You buy it. It's not very expensive.
Okay.
The nice thing about it is, as I said before, 1 liter of water gives you about 1,000 liters of hydrogen. So you're going to, we tend to make, say, 10 or 20 kilogram of hydrogen per day. So that water will last you quite before you fill it up. Mm. You replenish it and you just add on more demineralized. But what we do is we add a salt into it. The salt is called KOH. That is potassium hydroxide. That is just to enhance the flow of electrons across the mixture, because demineralized water has really got no flow of electricity at all, because there's no minerals in it. For example, seawater, and that's another fascinating thing we must talk about now.
Yeah.
Seawater has got a lot of flow of electricity because it's got a lot of minerals in it. But if you take demineralized water, there's actually no flow or very flow of electrons across, so you have to add the salts, and the salts remain there, by the way. They enhance the process of getting the hydrogen oxygen out. the process on the electrodes and the cathode side of it, so which makes it very very unique. It stays there. Bear in mind, it's also like a kind of acid, although it's on the alkaline side. So we use quite a high mixture, about 25% to 30%. So this acid, this is the only negative about the whole process. You mustn't spill it because it can burn you. So you must just take good care of it. And that's why our whole system, after many years of operation and testing, and we've tested this now comprehensively, especially the last 5 years, we believe the whole system can be made out of plastic polymer. So normal polymer, polypropylene plastics, that will last for a long, long time. And this is going to bring the cost down considerably. The only thing being only the electrons being, the electrodes being the only thing that, that's made out of metal. And we use nickel 200 for that. And if you start adding some catalyst to the electrodes, you'll get much better efficiency. But that's the next step we want to go to. We work with a specialist, Professor Crick, and his team from Northwest University, who's developed a wonderful catalyst that we employ on our membraneless system, on the electrodes itself, and they give us a tremendous increase in efficiency, 2.5 times more than we're getting currently, which all means that you have less electricity you're going to use for more hydrogen, and this what makes it ideal. If I can maybe just venture here and just tell you about why hydrogen is currently so expensive.
Sure.
It's made through... currently, you use a number of processes, but the alkaline one we prefer, the alkaline process, is where you use water because there's no carbon involved. Otherwise, you've got to use fossil fuels, which is a majority of uses all over the world, is they use fossil fuels and they take the hydrogen out of that, but there's a lot of pollution involved here. The green thing, and this is where we're excited about it, is to take normal water, demineralized water, and break that apart into its components, hydrogen and oxygen. Currently, the big companies use huge alkaline systems, and they're massive. They're about 5 to 10 to 20 tons. They're huge, and the capital outlay is exceedingly high. And they're very effective, and they last a long, long time. That's why alkalines are so popular. Mm. But because they're so huge, you can't use it in decentralized applications. You can only use them X on a factory scale, and then you've got to cart it around, and these companies even in South Africa that distributes these and build it, but they're huge and they're very, very expensive. The normal person can't really afford them, so you have to buy your hydrogen, and currently hydrogen is just exceedingly expensive.
What is it used for mainly?
Hydrogen is used for so many. It's used in the mining sector to get oxygen out. We in the process of getting involved in hydrogen for the last 19 years, is just you can't believe how many opportunities there are. The mining use it as such to get ore out, to get the oxygen out, to cut processes again, to cut on the emissions and stuff like that. They also use it down below because then they run fuel cells, which the emission is water. There's no toxic gases and fumes they have to pump out, which is the main thing. Anglo American is building now 3 or 4 locomotives that's going to run in some of their mines that pull all these high, heavy iron ore around. And that locomotives is running on fuel cells. Mm-hmm. So they need hydrogen for it. A lot of trains already being made overseas running on hydrogen, buses on hydrogen, but they all need hydrogen. Even for power production, which is it's well known for, is fuel cells is well known for that. They also use hydrogen. Mm-hmm. And this is where we believe the market is. We can produce in that. We can supply in that. We've got demands from people using forklifts running on hydrogen, golf cars running on hydrogen, but they all need hydrogen. Currently, you pay too much for it. It's not worth your while.
And these are always hydrogen fuel cells, are they, in these devices mainly?
All of them are indeed fuel cells. Okay. They are.
Which is like a battery.
It's like a, it's not really a battery, but it works on a similar principle.
Okay.
And what it does is there's no pollution involved here. So if you really want to be green, you use solar energy, you split the water, you save the hydrogen, and then you use it whenever you require it through a fuel cell, and there's absolutely no pollution involved.
So if I have a vehicle with a, let's say a forklift truck with a hydrogen fuel cell in it to power it, how do you top up the hydrogen? Is it a liquid that you pour? I mean, excuse my ignorance on this particular subject, but is it a liquid you pour into the...
No, not at all. It's in gaseous forms. I know BMW some years ago played around with liquid hydrogen, but that is not on because there's a lot of risks involved in keeping it under high pressure, and this is the whole idea. The hydrogen as such is made in a gaseous form. Mm. So when we make it in our process, it's in a gaseous form. Currently, we do it at 5 bar pressure, but to use it in a vehicle, in a car, you've got to increase it to about 700 bar. So you put it into quite high pressure, into specialized containers, mm-hmm. and in the motor cars, being that Toyota Mirai or the Hyundai that runs on hydrogen, it's also kept in containers under high pressure. So you go to a filling station, hydrogen, you fill it up, within 5 minutes, you're off, and that's it.
It's like pumping up your tire.
Exactly the same. Mm-hmm. The big demand is that there's no hydrogen available currently. If you want to get the cars, the electric cars running on hydrogen, that take off, they really need decentralized hydrogen. And this is where we believe it can come in. I didn't mention it, but our estimates at this stage is that we can make, instead of 1,500 rand a kilogram, we can do it at a tenth of the price, at 150 rand a kilogram. And we believe we can even halve that. So the technology is there. We've just started. It's like the Model T we just developed. It's not the Mercedes or the Toyota at this stage, but we're going to get there quickly, and we know how. Because there's lots of processes we are busy envisaging, you know, studying right now and experimenting with how we can even improve this. We you know, it's like we're scratching the surface of this enormous potential. We haven't reached the full potential. There's such a lot of things that we can do. So we're very excited about it.
Just out of interest, if you get the cost down to one-tenth of where it is now, how would that equate to filling up a car with fuel, pricing-wise?
I think it will compare for the very simple reason. If your car is currently at 60 rand compared to for petrol for the same energy value, 150 rand, but bear in mind, a fuel cell car is 60% efficient. Mm-hmm. A normal car is about 30% efficient. So you score on that one. Because the fuel cell car will run much longer on the same equivalent of energy than a petrol car. That's where you score, and then you have zero pollution. The main thing about fuel cells, obviously, is they're still busy developing it to last longer, to become cheaper. Mm. Like solars, they will drop in price. We've got no question, and especially if you start looking at recycling the platinum that's in the fuel cells, that's a huge market. But this takeoff needs one thing. It needs cheap hydrogen, and we believe we've got the answer to that.
Okay. All right, so you've spent a considerable amount of time developing this technology. I believe you've sought and received patents in a number of markets. Tell me a bit about that.
Yes, that was quite we thought it's so easy, you know, we got new technology, nothing like that, but my goodness, did we get objections from everywhere. You know, and we still, it's an ongoing process, but we're very happy to say that last month, just after our ICE conference in Copenhagen, we got a confirmation. Our patent was published in America, which was a big thing for us, because from there, the other markets will follow. Mm-hmm. It's also a very expensive exercise, but bear in mind, we spent 5 years in getting and fighting this patent to get it through. It's not easy. But now we've got the confirmation we desperately sought all along, that we have new technology. There's nothing like this in the world. So, yeah, that was quite an experience. And we're not over that, because we're going for all other countries we're covering as well. We've got patents registered locally in South Africa, but this is an easy exercise. But over there, it's not that easy. And suddenly you just become aware of how many thousands of similar patents there are.
Yeah.
But we've just, as I said, you know, we've just crossed the lines where people didn't do that altogether. And now it works for us. And what's nice also, we've got the scientific backing now. You know, we've got all the academics behind us. We worked with 3 local universities on various aspects, on, you know, doing acid mine water, electrolysis of seawater, which is another interesting subject. We must talk about that. Mm. So there's a lot of potential this technology gives, because it's got no membranes. And for that, it's so simple, it's so easy, it's so robust, it's going to last. It's an answer for Africa and for the world, we believe. But it's got to be taken to the next step now.
Okay. What is that next step? How do you take this to market?
Well, that's a difficult one. You know, we worked so hard on improving the technology and being invited to all these conferences and presenting it was an honor for us. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden we've got the due credits for it, and people are sitting upright and saying, wow, you've done it. You know, first, when we first appeared in the first conference, the second one actually was in Sydney in Australia in 2015. It was the World Hydrogen Technologies Convention, and they invited us to give a talk there, but we were sort of sidelined to hall 6F on the side with about 20 people listening to us. And they were, you know, just there to present theirs, and we didn't really get, but eventually people came to us and said, listen, it's nice that you talk about the principle. Go and build it. Go and prove it now. Mm. And we did just that. And last month, we were invited to present at the ICE 27, the International Conference in Electrolysis in Copenhagen, which is a highly specialized conference only dealing in electrolysis. And this is what we're doing. We're doing electrolysis for water. And all of the, bar none, and we were the exception there, all of them dealt with, all the presentations dealt with, how do you improve the membranes? How can you do better membranes? Here we come along with a radical technology that says no. You don't need membranes. And this had over 200 scientists sitting upright and taking notice. So we had wonderful reception over there and a lot of feedback and a lot of good questions and a lot of support. And now we are really ready to roll this out. What we need for the timing, we think of three ways we've got to do it. First, we've got to commercialize our first unit that can give you between 10 and 20 kilogram of hydrogen, pure hydrogen per day. That's the one thing we've got to commercialize. Commercialize, unfortunately, entails engineers and a lot of complying with all the international standards that you have something which is really fail-safe. You put in your water, you put on electricity, whether that be renewables, solar or wind, and it can handle the fluctuating currents, by the way, as well, which makes it ideal for renewables. Or you use normal grid electricity. And you make your hydrogen, and then we didn't touch on how do you store it. We just touched on we can give you hydrogen at this cheap price, which makes it opens lots of doors for us. The second aspect is let's work on continuing our R&D in the new developments that come from this. What else can we do? How can we improve the design? And we're already busy with that. We'll make it even cheaper, even better, even more efficient. And this is wonderful. Like adding new catalysts, you know, getting that 2.5 times better improvements. And there's a lot we learned at the conference as well we can utilize in our process now. That's the one side. And then the third aspect is let's look at seawater. Desalination of seawater is an ideal opportunity for us because this process of us takes normal seawater. You don't have to add any salts. You put electricity on the two electrodes of us. You flow it through our system. What do you get out? You get hydrogen out on the cathode side. And that pure hydrogen you can then sell off to somebody who produces electricity for power generation. Now, what makes it so nice and absolutely unbelievable is that the hydrogen, once it burns, it becomes water again. It combines with the oxygen in the atmosphere, so you get pure water from hydrogen. No pollution involved here. But then you must use it for electrical purposes, for electrical generation purposes through a fuel cell, or maybe a generator for that matter, if you get a hydrogen generator. But the idea being is you sell the hydrogen on the condition the guy gives you the water back, and it's pure water. So you can desalinate it absolutely at very little or no cost at all. So this is a possibility we must do. The only problem we limited at this stage is because 1 kilogram of hydrogen only gives you about 7 liters of water. So if you look at the dire position they have in the Cape Town and these areas right now, they need serious water. So it doesn't help. We say you give you 20 kilogram of hydrogen a day, you're going to get back 140 liters of pure water. That's not good enough. You need much more volumes. That's why we must scale our technology. But what's nice about it, and I just want to jump back to the seawater. Seawater gives you on the one side pure hydrogen, but on the other side it gives you chlorine gas. It's highly corrosive, unfortunately. Also, the stuff that the Germans used on the English in the First World War to shock you a little bit. But you must deal with it. So you must also capture that. And that can be, in turn, be converted into pure chlorine that you use in your swimming pool for disinfection. And we had also from mines certain requests for this kind of gas. They also use it as such. But again, because it's highly toxic, you've got to deal with it. But this is a spin-off you can get. On the one side, hydrogen you can sell to cover all the costs. And the other side, you get chlorine gas that you can also then, it's got a commercial value, but you must deal with it. And then eventually the seawater then turns into sodium hydroxide, NaOH. Sodium hydroxide is what you also use in the process. There's a huge demand for that as well. I'm not dealing with all the magnesium and all the other stuff in seawater that clever guys will deal with. But what I say, there's a lot of possibilities here for seawater desalination on a very simple process.
Okay. I wanted to ask, before I forget, you spoke that about electricity being applied in this process. How much power is needed to do this?
At this stage, we use too much power for the time being. 1 kilogram of hydrogen is tantamount to about 40 kilowatt per hour of electricity. But we use about double that amount. So we're not very efficient. We need to increase the efficiency. Our big claim to fame here is we've taken the whole equation into consideration and saying, what is the electricity, what's the capex cost, and we dealt with it over a period of 60,000 hours, which is about 7.5 years, because that's what the PEM electrolyzer, the fancy ones, you know, we're comparing with, will last for about 7 years. We believe they don't last that long. They probably last about 5 years, but be that as it may, our engineering team is extremely conservative as far as that's concerned. But our process, because we've got not at all the membranes that they've got to replace, we don't use platinum, we only use nickel, this will last you in using the durable plastics, as I said before. This will probably last you 20, 30 years. Currently, alkalines last up to 60 years. Mm-hmm. If we take that period, the cost will come down by even further. We can halve the cost or even get it even much further than that, because the capex cost is the one we address. We must now work on the efficiency side, and this is where I say the catalyst comes in and the new designs and stuff like that. But we're very optimistic about it. We're already testing some of these little models, but we need to take it to the next level now to also get that behind us.
So what does that entail? Does that mean working with a commercial partner to take this to market? Are you going to, where do you see the first commercial applications happening? Do you think they'll be in the industrial sort of environments, maybe working with a company like Sasol, for example? I'm just thinking your name off the top of my head. Or would you want to work with the car makers to potentially look at applying this in the vehicle industry? Where's the first likely commercial application of your membraneless technology?
There's such a lot of demand we have, so it's quite a difficult one to answer you. But yes, I think petrol companies, fuel, you know, the guys making the electric fuel cell cars, that's all the potential, because they want to sell it. Also, the people with the platinum, they want to get rid of platinum in this country. How do you get rid of it? We don't use platinum, by the way, but if we use it as a catalyst, a certain small amount, our efficiency goes, you know, sky high, which is wonderful. But if you sell cheap hydrogen, you're going to sell a lot of fuel cells for power generation. We've had demands from Africa, from Botswana government. We've spoken to some of the ministers there. They need urgently power in remote areas. To put up power lines is just out of this world. But if you have a one-off capital outlay, like solar panels, PVs, you have it, you pay it, you've got it there, you can then start saving saving that electricity by storing it now in the form of hydrogen. You don't need batteries, because batteries has got a limited lifestyle. Batteries are quite expensive, and they also, you know, the carbon footprint is not all that good. So we come here and we say this is a potential also for energy saving by means of, you know, PVs. Again, what's interesting, these solar farms, they've got an overcapacity. They're obliged by law to have an overcapacity when they negotiate with the government, with Eskom and these people. They have to give, I think, about 10 or 20% more electricity in the event that the sun doesn't shine all that much. So they have a lot of overcapacity that they do nothing with. If we can utilize that to make hydrogen, that is like free energy. The same applies to any wind farm if you have excess. And this is what's nice about the technology. Just to get a bit more technical, we operate, the optimum is if you work at 200 milliamps per square centimeter. We do that, our sweet spot at this stage is about 500 milliamps. So we prefer going a bit higher because you get more hydrogen out. But our technology, we've tested over 20,000 milliamps. In other words, 20 amps per square centimeter. It still works. This is wow. This is amazing. No other technology can do that. No current technology can even come close to. Maybe they can operate at about, say, 3,000 amps. That's it. Milliamps. They can't do anything else. They can't even get close to this. Obviously, we're not very efficient then. But we can make hydrogen big time if you've got spare electricity, you don't know what to do. Power stations, nuclear, wherever. We can make it. All we've got to do is now scale it up to really utilize it. But this is the potential that this technology has. It's really unlimited.
Okay. So just returning to that commercialization question, how do you commercialize it? Do you work through a partner to do that?
We need to. We can't do it. Remember, we just a number of guys like myself who's passionate about it and has put in some serious monies to take it up to this stage. And we believe in it. And we, you know, but now we've got to take it to the next level. We need a big engineering houses to become involved, not more than one. We need various universities to also look at the various aspects we can cover and the full potential. We really need a big brother to get involved here. Cost-wise, it's difficult to put what do we really require. I think Each aspect will probably be around about 30 million rands we need to just do it basic. But if you want to fast track it, do it quicker, yeah. You need more monies, you need more engineering teams. But there's such a lot of potential here that, you know, it's just frustrating that we've done it now. We've proven the technology. We've been on the international stage. We've published in an international journal of power sources, our whole invention, the whole lot. Everything is working well. But now how do we link up? How do we get Big Brother involved here?
If Big Brother, if you're listening, give Corey a call. I'd imagine this would be something, though, that Elon Musk would potentially be very interested in. Have you made any attempt to talk to Tesla about this technology and how it could potentially be applied and what they're doing?
The problem we're sitting with, yes, I think they would be interested in, because this could be a solution to their problems as well, although commercially it may be a threat to them because they're selling batteries.
Yeah.
And what we have is now total radical new technology. I can just take it. Maybe I couldn't get hold of them. Obviously, we don't have that access. We don't know how to. We'd love to get hold of Al Gore or whoever. Say, come involved, or DiCaprio. This is really green technology. That's going to be beneficial for mankind. But I personally think Elon Musk should be interested in this because this will give an answer to him as well. Then he can cover both sides. You can have your batteries and you can have your solars and you can have your hydrogen gas that you can store. We're very excited about the potential here, but again, we need to get to that next level now.
Okay. Now, there's announcements just about every day now from the car industry, the auto industry, about moving to electric vehicles. I think Volvo announced last week that they will not sell a fuel-only car after 2019. They'll only sell pure electrics or hybrids after that date. And, of course, all the other big manufacturers have all announced aggressive timelines to roll out electrics. And, of course, Tesla is leading in this space at the moment. So there's a lot of focus on electric battery-powered vehicles. Very little focus, certainly in the media, from these companies on building hydrogen fuel-powered vehicles. And I know the companies like Toyota and others have been, BMW have been looking to develop, and they've been tinkering with the hydrogen-based technology for many years, but you know it hasn't come to market for, I suspect, various reasons. What is holding that back? Is it purely the price of hydrogen? If your technology is deployed on a global basis and we can get the price of hydrogen down to 1/10 or 1/20 of what it is now, does that open the door for a hydrogen-powered future in vehicles?
Duncan, absolutely. The whole thing, I think the whole issue here, the stumbling block about the green economy and hydrogen as such, is the fact that it's so expensive. Even currently, there's Google's engineers some time ago in 2014 published a report which they've been commissioned by Google to do. That was Koenigstein and his friend, that they did go into the whole renewable energy saga, and they came back with this really frustrating bit and say there's no solution. Incremental changes does not make any difference here. What is really required is disruptive technology. In other words, something drastic. And we believe we've got it now. We've got that disruptive technology. It's going to change everything. It's going to change the way in which hydrogen is made in future. Currently, everybody's running the membrane technology route and spending billions on improving the, but that is small little changes. It's changing here and there. It's not taking the problem away for all the resistance, all the issues it's caused by slapping a membrane in between the electrodes. We come with total different technology, which is proven now. And we believe if we can give you cheap, decentralized hydrogen, it's going to unlock the cars, the whole thing, because now you can run your cars and you can even make it at home. But okay, problem is here, to bring it up to 700 bar is not that easy. You need a compressor, the stuff. That's why we believe the answer is actually very simple. Existing filling stations can run two tanks of hydrogen, say 20 kilogram, and they're quite small. Mm-hmm. If you put it under 700 bar, they're quite small. You have two tanks lying there outside on top of that. You don't even have to put them away because normally the LP gas is standing next to the kiosk, and you know that's more dangerous than anything you can't believe. You can put our tanks up there. You can have one filling station or one pump at the existing filling stations, and you deliver that by truck. You have maybe a factory just outside of town or in town, doesn't really bother. You make the hydrogen, you compress it, you do it. If you've got solar panels up, it's totally green, but you make it, you deliver it, and then you can solve this issue of where do you get hydrogen filling stations. Filling stations in the US cost about $2 million a piece to set up a filling station. We can do this at absolutely nothing. What you need is a pump. You need a place to put the pump, and you need the two tanks. And the tanks, you is special tanks imported, obviously, made from special ceramics and stuff. That is a Mark IV tank, they call it. Mm-hmm. Quite expensive, but they will last a long time. But that we can do. We can solve that issue very simply. And if we take the technology to the next level, it'll even be cheaper. That's why we believe this is really the golden or the silver bullet, they call, for this technology. We can really sort this out by means of this disruptive technology.
Okay. So it sounds to me as though, you've done a heck of a lot of work here. You've got prototypes. Where are these prototypes, by the way? Where have you?
It's in Sabenza. We're working with engineering companies there. So it's quite close to the airport.
Okay.
We're available for anybody who wants to come and have a look and chat to our engineering team. They're very enthusiastic young guys. They're very keen. They live and they breathe hydrogen for a long time now. So we're very, available. The main thing is if somebody wants to know more, go on our website. It's hydroxholdings.co.za, and there you can absolutely get everything from, about the company and where we want to go and the whole lot. Okay. And all the presentations we had and the papers we published, you're going to get over there.
How has it been funded to date, Corey? Is it self-funded?
Oh, that is a question. We started 19 years ago, and we thought it's going to take about 6 months. That's 19 years ago. And I was initially funded by my friend Martin Pauls, who's a public figure around, and he put some money in. He said, okay, let's do it 6 months basis, and then we're there. And we started. That was now when we started running the car now on this mixture of hydrox gas. And this is where we are 19 years down the line. In 2002, we saw it's too much. We established a public company. So we sold some shares to friends and family, and they all believed in this green dream, and they still do. And this is, we're extremely grateful for them. We were approached at stage or another by government officials from TIA, very excited.
TIA, Technology Innovation Agency.
Absolutely. Okay. They were in my office, very excited, and they promised us a world. Unfortunately, absolutely nothing came of that. We spent months giving them presentations and the whole lot. And all we wanted some money to pay the patent attorneys, because that's the biggest expense we had. And absolutely nothing came out, unfortunately to say. I've been approached some a week or two ago again by them. Again, please apply online. I'm sorry, it's really, for us, we'd rather work through private funding, because I don't think the government has got funding, or otherwise they don't really understand what's the enormity of this invention and what it can mean for our country.
Okay, what about private funding? I would imagine if you were in the US, you'd have venture capitalists beating down your door to talk to you. Is there an opportunity? Have you spoken to venture capital in South Africa to raise the funds to start to talk about taking this solution to market?
Duncan, we did speak to one company locally, but again, what they're looking is the low-hanging fruit. Mm-hmm. How quickly can you sell? Mm-hmm. Where's your business plan? What profits are we going to make? We don't have that. We're not ready yet. We think the commercial one is going to take between 12 months to 18 months to get ready for market. And, again, serious money, serious engineering teams involved there. So it's going to take some time. So the low-hanging fruit is unfortunately not there. We still need people who believe in this and is prepared to wait it out and then, reap the rewards afterwards.
Okay, great. Corey De Jager, thank you for joining us on the Tech Central podcast today. What was that website that you mentioned? Was it hydroxholdings.com?
No, hydroxholdings.co.za.
.co.za. So that's the email address. Sorry, that's the website you need to go to, Elon, when you want to find out more about what Corey and his team is up to. Corey, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed this.